Good morning, friends and colleagues. I'm Henry Childers, and I'm honored to be your moderator today. Our topic is understanding the anemic cat, and you'll find it on page 313 in the notes, in the proceedings of the AAHA. We are extremely proud to have as our speaker today Dr. Rick Allerman. Dr. Allerman graduated from LSU in 1980. He practiced small animal medicine in New Orleans. He received his Ph. degree in molecular biology of infectious disease at the University of Florida. Dr. Allerman is a diplomate of the American Board of Veterinary Practitioners, a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Pathology, specialty clinical pathology. He received the Florida Teacher of the Year Award in 1998 and 2002. He also received the Support Services Clinician of the Year Award and the Norden Distinguished Teacher of the Year Award. He is an Associate Professor and Resident Coordinator of Clinical Pathology at the University of Florida. Let's welcome Dr. Rick Allerman.
Just take me a moment to get hooked up here, and they may be recording this session. So you should put this microphone on, although I have a big mouth, and you could probably hear me without it. What we're going to do is cover a topic, understanding the anemic cat, that could be pretty broad. If most of you, I'm sure, work with cats, maybe even exclusively, and if you've done any work with cats, you know they love to get anemic. It seems that anything can happen to a cat, and they will be anemic. So we're going to try as best I can, when they ask me to put together a discussion about feline anemia, to kind of discuss with you some of the important aspects of the cat and why they become so anemic and some of the disease processes that will do that, in addition to some of the diagnostic abilities that we have to detect these different anemias. So we have a lot to talk about. So why do cats become anemic so frequently? There's a couple of factors that are involved with that. One is that the cat erythrocyte has a very short lifespan compared to other species. Their erythrocyte lifespan is about 60 days, where other species, for example, the dog, is 110 to 120 days. So they really have a reduced time in circulation. Cats have limited iron stores. Normally, we do not see stored iron in the cat bone marrow. Well, we frequently see it in other species, and that's normal. That leads to a couple of problems. Not so much iron deficiency, because that can certainly develop in cats, but the anemia of chronic inflammatory disease seems to develop extremely rapidly in the cat, and it's associated with an inhibition to release iron from their stores, and they don't have much to begin with. So that seems to develop quickly. In addition to that, cats have a limited capacity when compared to other species to producing red blood cells. So all of those things combined, and as well, we'll talk a little bit about the hemoglobin issue with cat, because their hemoglobin is more susceptible to oxidant damage than other species. So you can see with all of these factors put together why cats will sneeze and become anemic. Okay, so we're going to take a look at some specifics. We'll talk first about assessing these animals and what we can utilize to help characterize these anemias. The first part would be to look at the quantitative analysis, which is the numbers that you would receive either from your laboratory or from your own hematology in-house equipment. And that can help us in a couple of ways. It'll help us characterize an anemia, and it certainly is useful in that. But in addition to that, we'll point out some specific problems with the cat where it can maybe help us identify disorders that might be occurring in this species. Then, of course, there's microscopic analysis that's critical in evaluating the feline anemia. And really, that is the only way we can reliably characterize anemia in the cat is with a microscopic exam. So just having the quantitative analysis alone is very frequently not going to tell you the whole story. So let's talk about the quantitative analysis first. First, we'll look at the measurements that you will receive that we evaluate red cell mass in the cat.
the hematocrit, red blood cell count, or packed cell volume. They all really measure the same thing, but they're slightly different in the ways that they're measured so that they really sometimes can give you different answers. Particularly, we want to point out the difference between packed cell volume and hematocrit. And the same thing would hold true for red blood cell count. These are usually going to be very similar unless an animal is agglutinating or red cells are sticking together. Then they're not going to be similar. And in those cases, your red blood cell count and your hematocrit, which is a calculation that uses the red blood cell count, will be abnormally low, artifactually low. So that in those cases, only packed cell volume will be accurate. So if you have a cat that's hemolyzing, and you suspect it's a hemolytic anemia, the best way to really characterize the red cell mass in that animal is to do a packed cell volume. The old spin the microhematocrit tube down, put it on your little grid, and measure it that way. Because these other values might be erroneously low. So what about the quantitative analysis of erythrocytes and classification when you have a low packed cell volume or hematocrit? Well, we naturally would think about the three big categories of processes that would result in a reduced red cell mass: hemorrhage, hemolysis, and decreased production. And those are the big three, and it's really nice, at least from this standpoint, to get this far. It helps us to limit the scope of the multitude of disease processes that we have to kind of incorporate in our thinking when the cats are anemic. And to help decide with this, we look at the red cell indices. That will give us our first indication about what kind of anemia we're dealing with. And again, these red cell indices that many of us usually like to ignore, they're important when the animal is anemic. So when you have a non-anemic patient, you can ignore them. But when the animal is anemic, you really should be paying attention to the red blood cell indices. And the two most critical ones for us to evaluate with regard to characterizing the anemia are the mean cell volume and the mean cell hemoglobin concentration. And I highlighted ASCIST because they don't always characterize the anemia for us, and we need to recognize that. But they certainly can help. And in addition to that, we're going to talk about a specific disease process that's peculiar to the cat where these indices can be useful. Okay, so mean cell volume. Here's Big Cat, having his volume measured. The mean cell volume is the average size of the red blood cell. Of course, this mean measurement is taken from a multitude of red cells that are measured, maybe a million or more that the machine will measure and then give you an average volume. So most of the machines will measure this directly. The old method was to use packed cell volume and red cell count and calculate the mean cell volume. But now our automated hematology analyzers will measure that directly for you. So what can cause abnormalities in this mean cell volume? And we'll look at these mean cell volume and mean cell hemoglobin individually first and the disease processes that can affect them. Well, increased mean cell volume, which is of course larger than normal red blood cell population, really is the characteristic feature of a regenerative response. But you have to recognize that a regenerative anemia must be ongoing for quite some time before mean cell volume becomes elevated. And the reason is you have to have enough large immature red blood cells in circulation to actually affect the mean, to pull that mean value up. So it has to be overcompensating for all the normal sized erythrocytes that would be in the circulation. And it might take a week or more for that to happen. The other process that will cause an increased mean cell volume, and this would not be a regenerative anemia, is the feline leukemia virus. And it will cause myeloproliferative disorders, which are disorders in red blood cell maturation, where the mean cell volume will be high, but it will not be a regenerative anemia. And the animals, of course, will be anemic there. It's also important when we have an anemic animal if we find that the red blood cell volume is decreased. And that's an easy one because in the cat, the only thing that really would cause that would be iron deficiency. They've depleted iron stores and now their red blood cells that are produced are smaller than normal. But this requires a month or so before this will happen because first You have to have a disease process where iron stores are depleted. And that can happen relatively quick in the cat, but then they'll start making red blood cells with less and less and less hemoglobin. By the time that they get to a smaller amount of a smaller size red cell that overcompensates for the normal red cells that are present, it could take up to a month for the MCV to drop. Okay, and we can have autofactual increases in mean cell volume, of course, if you have autoagglutination, because the machine counts these little piles of cells as one, and it'll increase your mean cell volume that way. What about mean cell hemoglobin concentration? Again, that is the average amount of hemoglobin that would be present in an erythrocyte. And this is calculated. Yes, question.
Just before you go on,
yeah.
You're saying then that the human red cell, when it's first produced in the marrow, is just physically larger than a 30-day-old cell, which is why it's raising
the MCV? What happens is that, for which process? For FELV? That's correct, yeah. The question is, why would the MCV be higher in mean cell volume? Normally, when red cells are produced, they start out much larger than when they complete maturation and they mature. So when you have a regenerative response, the bone marrow starts releasing immature red blood cells into circulation that would be normally bigger than the mature red cell. So it's a factor of increased immaturity that causes the mean cell volume to be high. So the hemoglobin concentration that is within a cell is a calculation that is made typically with automated analyzers based on the hematocrit and the hemoglobin that's measured. So we do have situations where mean cell hemoglobin is decreased. And there are two of them. One is a regenerative anemia, where we have immature, large red cells in circulation, and the hemoglobin concentration of those cells is not fully developed. The other one would be in an iron-deficient patient. And here, the hemoglobin is fully developed in the cell. They're not going to make any more, except there's not enough of it, because the animal doesn't have the constituents to produce the hemoglobin that it needs. And we'll talk about how to distinguish those when we start looking at concurrent evaluations of both of these, which is what you really need to do to evaluate these animals correctly. There is no disease that actually causes an increased amount of hemoglobin within the cell. But there are cases where the mean cell hemoglobin concentration that is measured is artifactually increased, and they occur in disease processes. So when you see a high MCHC, there's certain diseases that you need to think about. The first thing is intravascular hemolysis, and it's just a measurement factor that will result in this and causes a high MCHC. Agglutination will do that. Heinz body formation, which is important in the cat, causes an increased mean cell hemoglobin concentration to be measured, and then lipemia. So those are the four processes that we know increase mean cell hemoglobin. But again, this is an artifact of measurement, and these diseases, not hemoglobin within the cell. So now let's put these together and see how we distinguish one from another using these red cell indices. And it's really necessary for us to do that, to interpret. So this is just a list of terminology for mean cell volume, if it's normal, if it's high, or if it's microcytic and small. And then terminology, the same thing for mean cell hemoglobin. So we put them together. This animal is anemic, and it's a normocytic, normochromic anemia. Okay? And so we'll talk about that first. The anemic patient that is normocytic and normochromic. Of course, this is a classic example of the non-regenerative anemia. The anemia where the bone marrow has not responded and released immature red blood cells into circulation. There are a few things that we need to consider for this process. And what I like to do, and this is particularly important, I think, with the cat, is to evaluate the animal for the disease processes that we can easily eliminate when they have a non-regenerative anemia. The things that aren't so challenging for us to try to diagnose. The top of the list, and the most common, will be anemia of chronic inflammatory disease. Number one cause. And we need to rule that out. We need to rule out the animal could be in chronic renal failure or have liver disease, and that's particular to the cat, that they develop anemias associated with liver disease. And we'll talk more in detail about these, but I'm just listing them here for you. And once we've ruled out those processes, and we can't really pinpoint exactly what's the cause of this non-regenerative anemia, now we have to work with bone marrow disease. We have to collect the marrow and have someone or yourself evaluate it. One of the things that we have to consider with a normocytic, normochromic anemia is that maybe the bone marrow just hasn't had time yet to respond. Maybe the hemolysis or hemorrhage is so acute that the bone marrow just hasn't released anything in the peripheral blood. So we do need to consider that in patients that have obvious hemolytic or hemorrhagic disease, yet we don't see any regeneration in the peripheral blood. It takes 2 to 3 days. Cats, although they are not very good at with regard to the magnitude of their response to an anemia, are very quick to respond. So where other animals might take 3 to 6 days, cats usually 2 or 3 days, you're going to start seeing changes in the peripheral blood from their anemia. Okay? But again, it might take a while before the indices actually are changed. But if you look at a blood smear, you'll start to very quickly see polychromatophilic cells, immature red blood cells in circulation, even though the indices won't be abnormal. Okay? So we want to check that first before we decide. It's normocytic, normochromic. So what about macrocytic and hypochromic? Big cells, not enough hemoglobin. That's the classic example of a regenerative response. And we have pictured here some normal cat red blood cells, some that are a little bit bigger, that are more immature. Now this one would be the polychromatophilic cell that would have less hemoglobin. You can tell by its gray color than these orange colored cells, and a little bit bigger. When we see a macrocytic hypochromic, we need to then think about the regenerative, the processes that cause regenerative anemia and associated with blood cell loss. Not bone marrow disease, just blood cell loss. And we're going to go into these in a lot more detail as we get into looking at the peripheral blood smears in these cats and the diseases that cause hemolysis and hemorrhage and some of the processes that are peculiar to the cat. I'm just going to list these other abnormalities for you. The one that's important for the feline species is the top one. The macrocytic but normochromic. You know, we said macrocytic hypochromic means it's regenerating. But if this animal is macrocytic but the MCHC is normal, that's what we see with the feline leukemia virus infection. And it's not a good finding. Usually these animals are very ill. They're severely anemic. Their red blood cells are large because the retrovirus inhibits red cell division. So that even though they're mature, they're much bigger than they normally are. And that's a dysplastic change. When you've impacted the cell maturation in that fashion, it's definitely a dysplastic change, and it might already be neoplastic. If it's not neoplastic, it will soon be neoplastic. So, again, this is not a good finding when we see an anemic cat, the macrocytic, normochromic cat. These two processes both have hyperchromasia, increased MCHC in their characterization. And I just listed them because the one where we have autoagglutination, we talked about all these different disease processes that cause high MCHC. If they're autoagglutinating, the MCV will also be high. If the animal has intravascular hemolysis but is not autoagglutinating, or Heinz bodies, or lipemia, the MCV is going to be normal with those patients. But then again, the hemoglobin concentration will be elevated. Okay, so I just wanted to kind of review with you some of the things that are important in the cat with regard to the indices. But we're going to really spend most of our time talking about what looks like in the blood and what are those disease processes that we need to worry about in the cat that can make them so anemic. So it's really critical, and it's really the best way, sometimes the only way, to characterize feline anemia is by looking at blood smear, either doing a retic stain or looking at it with the right Giemsa or a diff quick stain to look at morphology. And I highlighted this because I want you to know many of us get retic counts. We have excellent machines that will give you automated reticulocyte counts. The problem with the CAT is there are no analyzers that can count punctate reticulocytes. They only count aggregate reticulocytes. And we'll see that punctate reticulocytes can be important in the CAT. Okay, so we'll talk about the difference between the two and when punctates are up and when aggregates are up. And you only can get that from looking at a reticulocyte stain. Okay, so let's talk about the normal erythrocyte in the cat because it's different than in a dog. They have a small erythrocyte compared to other species. And because of that, their central pallor, which is the small pale area inside the cell, is small and indistinct in the cat. And that's important when we have changes in that central pallor. So we have to recognize a couple of things. One, when the central pallor changes and gets bigger. And two, cats, some of their red cells don't have any central pallor at all. So if you saw cells like this in a dog, you'd say, ah, the dog has spherocytes, immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. Not in the cat. Not in the cat. Many blood cells in the cat look like that, and they're normal. So do cats get spherocytes? Absolutely. But you cannot call them because we find cells that look like that in normal animals. The other things that cats tend to have, even in normal states, would be a little bit of rulo, stacking of red cells. That can be normal in some cats. These red blood cell inclusions called Howell Jolly bodies, they tend to be in low numbers in normal cats. And we're going to look at these, the nuclear remnants. And I got a question mark besides Heinz bodies. And we'll talk more about Heinz bodies in cats and when they are normal and when they're not normal. Okay, so we'll have to kind of view that. Because you'll look in the literature and you'll say cats can have up to 5 to 10% of their erythrocytes can have Heinz bodies and that can be normal. Well, maybe, but not always. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So here's rulo in the cat. And typically we can look at a cat blood smear and see that it's individualized cells that are in a line kind of stacking. And it's clearly rulo. But if you question whether this animal is agglutinating or not, and it can happen frequently in cats, particularly cats with inflammatory disease, high proteins, inflammatory proteins in the fluid can cause the cells to stick together. Oopsie. Thank you. Look, you're right on the spot there too, Lauren. You're doing great. Yeah, we don't want to hurt my little ears. If you have a question about whether this animal has rulo or agglutination, you just put a drop of this patient's blood in the middle of saline. Mix it up. Put a drop of that solution on the slide and look at it, unstained with very low light source. If it's rulo, all of the red cells would be individualized. If it's agglutination that's mediated by antibodies, these red cells are going to stay clumped together, even diluted in excessive amounts of saline. So it's an easy way for us. And again, cats tend to develop rulo rather quickly with inflammatory disease. Okay, so let's talk about the anemias in the cat. So we'll talk a little bit about hemolysis, and we'll talk about hemorrhage. And these, of course, would be regenerative anemias in most cases. Certainly hemolytic anemias are going to be regenerative always. However, hemorrhage is going to be regenerative initially until these cats deplete their iron stores, and then they're going to have a non-regenerative anemia associated with hemorrhage. And we'll look at those and detect how we can view them when we look at them microscopically. And what we're looking for here to help with these different regenerative responses is changes in erythrocyte color. Those give us the indication about whether we have an anemia that is regenerating and hemolytic or is now no longer regenerating because it's chronic hemorrhage. Changes in color in these erythrocytes. So naturally, you need to be looking at these blood smears to evaluate that. And the two different processes or the names that we use for these processes are polychromasia, where we have a immature erythrocyte that has reduced hemoglobin and is blue, or hypochromasia, where we have an iron deficient erythrocyte. And so we're going to look at these. If you also with regard to regenerative anemias, the way to characterize a regenerative anemia, or not characterize, but actually quantitate the regenerative response, is to do reticulocyte count. And we'll talk about that, how to perform them manually, because in the cat, that's the only way we have to do a complete evaluation. Okay, so changes in color. We'll look at polychromasia and hyperchromasia. Both have reduced hemoglobin in the blood cells. So here is an example of an anemic cat that has polychromasia. So we have the normal erythrocytes, and we have these large, immature, basophilic erythrocytes. Now, if you did a retic stain on this blood, these would stain as the aggregate retics. So polychromasia is a rough estimate of the aggregate retics in the cat. You can't see the punctate retics with this stain. You don't know which ones are punctate. Okay, so you have to do a new methylene blue stain to see that. So that's the only way to quantitate. And this is a new methylene blue retic stain. Very, very easy to do. If you have new methylene blue stain and a test tube and a drop of cat blood, you put a drop of new methylene blue and a drop of blood in a tube, let it sit at room temperature for 10 to 15 minutes, and then make a smear with that solution, just like you would any other blood smear. So you put a drop of blood on there, make your slide smear, dry it, and you're ready to examine it. It's already stained. Okay? So you look at it on 100x oil, and we count 500 erythrocytes. And we count them as either being normal, which would have no blue staining whatsoever. Okay? These would be the normal erythrocytes. Punctate, which will be most of the reticulocytes that are present, and this only happens with new methylene blue, where we have the spots in the cell. So these would all be punctate reticulocytes. Or aggregate reticulocytes, which would have all of the reticulum clumped together. Now, it won't be in a round circle, but it'd all be clumped together. So here, this is an aggregate retic. Here's an aggregate retic. Here's one, and there's one. Okay? Now, the most immature of the erythrocytes are the aggregate. But it takes 10 days before these aggregates actually get to the mature level. So they remain punctates for quite a long time. Okay? They remain punctates much longer than they do aggregates. So they'll circulate as punctate reticulocytes for quite a while. So let's
life expectancy of the aggregate?
Only a couple of days, and we'll show you that right now. Yeah, we have that right here. That's a good question about the lifespan of an aggregate, because that's important when we're looking at these anemic cats that have a hemorrhage or hemolysis. It's important for us when we look at these punctate and aggregate to see how the animal responds to anemia. So this is experimentally induced. I did not do this study, but this is experimentally induced bleed. So here we have, this line represents the packed cell volume of the patient. And here, of course, was day zero where the bleed occurred. The packed cell volume dropped from 35 down to 15. At that point, the punctate retics almost immediately increase. Okay, so they release them very quickly in the blood. 1 or 2 days later, we start to get the aggregates to go up. But notice how quickly they go up and then go back down again. So that while the animal is still anemic and still regenerating, because these aggregates are still going up, the punctates are back down to zero. So if you check that patient at this point in time, you would find it's still anemic, and if you're just looking at an aggregate retic response, it would indicate to you that the anemia is non-regenerative. Well, that wouldn't be the case at all. It would truly be a regenerative anemia, and you would know that if you have a punctate retic count, because they would be markedly elevated, and these are corrected reticulocyte percentages on the side. It would be elevated up to almost 30% even at this point in time. So that's why we need to look at both of these values in the cat, not just the aggregates. And naturally, if this anemia was continued and ongoing, if there was a continued hemorrhage, these aggregate retics would then try to stay up, but they don't go very high in a cat. I mean, you don't see the same kind of reticulocyte counts in a cat that you get from a dog. You know, here's an animal's packed cell volume went down to 15, and it maxed out at about 3% retics. That's not very high when you consider dogs will go 10%. And so they're very limited in their ability to kick out these reticulocytes. But their punctates will be around for a lot longer. Okay, so we need to know both in the cat. And again, the value that you get back from an automated analyzer will be aggregates only. So what else happens in a regenerative anemia in the cat? Well, we certainly will have polychromatophilic cells present if it's regenerating. But we'll also have increased numbers of these little inclusions, which are hollow jolly bodies. They're nuclear remnants. You know, erythrocytes, and this isn't showing up very well, but this is a red blood cell with a round nucleus in it. Nucleated red blood cells, of course, are only in the marrow under normal circumstances. But when the bone marrow gets stimulated and has to kick out a lot of erythrocytes, it will throw out some nucleated red cells. The ideal situation is before the red cell leaves the marrow, the nucleus is squeezed out. Okay? And so it comes out without a nucleus, even when they're immature. Sometimes a piece of that nucleus gets left behind, and that's the hollow jolly body. Now in the cat, they will let hollow jolly bodies circulate because their spleen is non-sinusoidal. So they don't have good phagocytic capabilities in the spleen, which is good for the cat when it comes to Heinz bodies. But it will leave them circulate for quite a while. So you will see increased numbers of erythrocytes with hollow jolly bodies and nucleated red cells in a regenerative response. But we don't use them to characterize an anemia as being regenerative, especially in the cat. Only polychromasia or reticulocyte counts, not nucleated red blood cells or hollow jolly bodies. And the reason is, I'll show you in just a few minutes, nucleated red blood cells in the cat can be seen in non-regenerative anemias. But we'll know that, and we'll show you later on before we get to talk about tumors in the bone marrow. So here, I apologize for the quality of this picture. I have some others from different cats, but this is an older picture of an anemic cat. And you can tell, looking at this, that this anemia is non-regenerative, right? Doesn't have any polychromasia on this, and was non-regenerative. But there's something wrong with these red blood cells that is very obvious if you know the cat. But you have to know the cat first. If you're thinking dog, when you're looking at this, you would say that's perfectly fine. But in the cat, these are severely hypochromic. And the reason is the central pallor is much too distinct and large and prominent in this animal. This animal had had a GI lymphoma and was bleeding in the GI tract for quite a while, developed iron deficiency anemia, and these are severely hypochromic cells. Too much central pallor for a cat would be normal in a dog. So let's kind of prove this point. I'm going to show you this a couple of different times by mixing that cat's blood with normal cat blood. Now, the blood sat for a while before we did this little trick of mixing normal blood and hypochromic blood. But it's good if you're wondering about this, whether they're hypochromic or not. Get a normal cat or a cat that does not have an anemia. Mix the blood together. You can clearly see, just ignore the crenation, its artifact of sitting in the tube. But you can clearly see the difference between these larger, dark-colored cells in the normal cat versus our iron-deficient, hypochromic cat. And iron deficiency, and of course, would be associated with blood loss almost always. Okay, so those are the kind of processes that actually are involved with the regenerative response. But let's talk about some of the diseases in the cat that we need to think about when we have hemorrhage and when we have hemolysis. So first we'll talk about hemolysis. Top of the list, the immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. And we have to put that up there because it encompasses so many disorders in the cat. But we have to remember that immune-mediated hemolytic anemia in any animal can be primary, which means we haven't identified an inciting cause, or secondary, which means we have identified an inciting cause. Again, spherocytes are not detectable in cats. So let's talk about the primary immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. Much less common in cats, But a recent report, and if you don't have this article, I would encourage you to read it. It really describes in very nice detail one of the few articles about immune-mediated hemolytic anemias in cats, and especially those that are primary. Less common than in a dog, but the Coombs test is a reliable way to diagnose the disease in the cat. One of the issues that we deal with actually in dogs and cats, but this actually brought it out in cats because we've known about it longer in dogs, is that there are a significant population of cats who have a non-regenerative form of immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. And that, fortunately, unlike in the dogs, Coombs test is reliable in detecting these patients, but they don't regenerate because it's against erythrocyte precursors in the marrow. That's what the destruction is against. So they have a severe non-regenerative anemia, the best way to diagnose it is with a Coombs test. Sometimes requires a bone marrow to actually visualize erythrocyte precursor destruction in the marrow, which we can't see. Okay, so this really good article about primary IMHA in the cat. This article cited that even though the disease is less common, it appears that cats have a better prognosis with this disease. You know, we know that about 30 to 50% of our dogs with IMHA, depending on what type they have, don't make it. You know, you can't get them in remission. But it seems to be better in the cat. So some good news for the cat who is anemic, because there isn't much. But primarily, most of the hemolytic anemias in the cat are secondary. Most of the IMHAs are secondary. And I have a nice little list of infectious diseases that cause secondary immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. Unfortunately, with the exception of cytoxoan, you might not see the cause in the peripheral blood. Certainly, you can't visualize microscopically the feline leukemia virus. Mycoplasmas, we can visualize them, but they sometimes disappear on us. And then Bartonellosis, which this is actually a picture of a Bartonella-infected erythrocyte from a dog with endocarditis. But we know Bartonella, which is an erythroparasite, we rarely ever see the organism in the peripheral blood, and we know that it has been diagnosed as an inciting cause of hemolytic anemia in both the dog and the cat. But we can't find these bugs. And we know how common Bartonella is, especially in the cat. So how much does this, it's hard to say, but it's worthwhile investigating in those hemolytic anemia cats where you don't know what the cause is. And then I think much less likely in the feline species, neoplasia and drugs can incite a secondary IMHA. So let's look at some of these things. And let's talk about Mycoplasma haemophilus. This image it's an EM picture that John Harvey gave me, he's a guy I work with, of an erythrocyte infected with Mycoplasma haemophilus, the old name Haemobartonella. And what we can see here are, this is one of the organisms attached to the surface of the cell. These are epicellular parasites. They don't invade the erythrocyte. But what they do is they attach firmly to the membrane and indent it. Here's a little chain of them right there. So they indent the membrane, and then they release and leave the red cell. And when they leave the red cell, they cause these pock-like lesions on the erythrocyte membrane, which incites an immune-mediated response against the erythrocyte, even though the organism is gone. Okay? So that's how you see these cats in a hemolytic crisis, and you look, and it might be caused by mycoplasma, but you can't find the bug. Okay, and the parasitemia in these animals is cyclic. Now, this is an experimentally induced cat that we had in a trial we did a few years ago. But it just shows you lots of organisms. If you could find that clinically, you'd be really happy. In order to get this nice picture, we had to daily follow the parasitemia on these cats until it peaked out, and then we collected the blood. It peaked out about 30 days after we inoculated them. Anyway, so what we're seeing here are chains of organisms, little rings of organisms, and then, of course, you have the individual spots. But notice how all of these organisms that we're able to identify are flat on the membrane. They're not sticking out of the membrane. They're flat in it. And that's how we want to identify these organisms. In focus with the membrane, don't shine, and flat on the membrane, not sticking out. This might be junk. But when you find them like this, indenting the membrane, and in focus, when your red cell membrane is in focus, it's a more reliable way to visualize them. Okay? No, sir. This is a Reit-Giemser stain, or equivalent would be Difquick stain. It's not a new methylene blue. I have a hard time. I know new methylene blue stains them, but it also stains reticulocytes. So, man, trying to do that would be tough, I think, to look at them. So why do we have so much difficulty with these little rascals? Well, they have episodic parasitemias. They gradually rise over days and then drop immediately, just quickly drop. And then so we have inconsistent correlation between the parasitemia and clinical disease that we see in these. Then we have all of the artifacts and all the other things that we have in the blood that would inhibit us from looking for these little tiny organisms. So it's tough. You have to have a good blood smear that's clean. You know, good stains that are clean. Have a smear that doesn't have drying artifacts. So you want to blow dry your blood smears with a warm air dryer. So to reduce all of these changes. And you don't want to leave the blood in EDTA. Because EDTA will knock the parasites off of the cells. And if you do that, you cannot identify them. They just look like granular debris in the background. Okay, so the best way is to collect it in the HEP tube and make a smear right from the cat. You know, we used to just put a 25-gauge needle in a cephalic vein and then just grab a couple of capillary tubes and fill them up and ready to go. Make a smear and look for it. So this just is a comparison. This is a clinical case of the size of a Howell Jolly body with these little mycoplasma organism. So it's much smaller than these Howell Jolly bodies. Okay, just wanted to show you the difference. So here's our cat, Tina, a peak parasitemia. This was at 9 o'clock in the morning. We were collecting blood because we were analyzing the protein antigens on the Haemobartonella, at the time it was called Haemobartonella organism. So we were going to isolate these organisms from the blood. So we checked them every day. We found, okay, she's at peak parasitemia. And they would cycle with this. So this is probably the first time that she had one this high. So at 9 o'clock, we did this. We went back at 10:30, collected some blood, went to isolate the organisms, made another smear, and that's what it looked like. In an hour and a half, they were gone. And that's not the first time. John Harvey did some work years before we did this, recognized the same thing. The parasitemias climb, 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 and then drop. Where did they go? Somewhere in the cat. So here's Cytoxoan felis, protozoal hemoparasite that's seen in areas of the country where they have a wildcat reservoir, like the panther and the bobcat and some of the mountain lions that can carry this bug. It's tick transmitted. They don't usually get sick from it, but when those little infected ticks bite a domestic cat, they get very ill. And these are protozoal organisms, and you can tell they're protozoal because they have a nucleus and a cytoplasm surrounding them. Okay. Severe disease. It is treatable with imidacarb. The problem is the cats get sick so quickly and die so quickly, you have to be able to recognize it immediately when they come in if you want a chance to save these animals. They usually come in laid out on a table. But what about Heinz body anemia? Although this is not a regenerative anemia, typically, I put it in here because in most species it is. In the cat, Heinz bodies are frequently formed because the hemoglobin is susceptible to oxidant damage. And so these are Heinz bodies stained with the Reit-Giemser or Difquick stain, these kind of protrusions, or what we call nose-like protrusions on these erythrocytes. That's when they're pushed off to the side. When you're looking down on them, they look like these pale spots, like this, next to that central pallor. Those are Heinz bodies when you're looking down on them. But when they turn to the side, you can see them. The cat is very susceptible to developing Heinz bodies, but it doesn't produce the hemolytic crisis that it does in other species. And it's because their spleen tolerates them, just like they do the Howell Jolly bodies. So they'll circulate and circulate. What it does do, though, is it reduces their capacity to carry oxygen, and it reduces the erythrocyte lifespan. So they can become anemic associated with them. Of course, we know they become anemic for a number of different reasons. One of the things that we recognize, and this is work done by Mary Christopher at UC Davis, was that there are certain disease conditions not associated with your typical onion toxicosis or ingestion of something like acetaminophen or propylene glycol in your semi-moist foods, but just disease processes that induce Heinz body formation in the cat. And those are the top three were diabetes mellitus, hyperthyroidism, and lymphoma. So those are some things that we want to think about if in cats that you see large Heinz bodies where you can't really identify an exogenous source of oxidant damage. If you want to really see Heinz bodies, you need a new methylene blue stain. And you can make a blood smear and just put the drop of new methylene blue on top of it to see them. We talk about some cats normally having Heinz bodies, and that may be true, but they're not big Heinz bodies like this. And you will not see them on a right Giemsa or DiffQuick smear. They're tiny Heinz bodies if they're normal in the cat, not big Heinz bodies. So if you actually can see them from your DiffQuick stain, there's a problem, okay? So if you read, some cats have Heinz bodies normally, it's only the small ones, not ones that you can see. Yes? Oh, yes, thank you, Dr. Childress. Appreciate that. So let's talk a little bit now. That was hemolysis in the cat. Let's talk a little bit about hemorrhage in the cat. And we've listed some obvious things that cause hemorrhage in the cat. And chronic hemorrhage in some cases, like fleas and intestinal parasites. But this is the one I want to kind of focus on, the occult hemorrhage, which is the most common cause of iron deficiency, particularly in adult cats. And it requires prolonged bleeding. In the acute stages of hemorrhage, we see a good regenerative response with polychromasia, right? But this is a temporal response. And as hemorrhage continues, this anemia goes from macrocytic and hypochromic, starts to drop down to being a non-regenerative anemia, where it's normocytic, and then eventually it becomes microcytic when iron stores are depleted. So this is a temporal response in a patient. So this would be an example of an acute regenerative response in hemorrhage. And I just described what happens with chronic disease. Here is another case. And you know, for some reason, in the adult cats that have occult hemorrhage in the GI tract, it appears that these guys have GI lymphoma. Because that's what this is another case of the same thing. This is a severely hypochromic cat, had chronic GI bleed from GI lymphoma. And you can tell that these cells, many of them, and it's kind of, this is only from one cat. So these look normal, but then the cat became iron deficient and started producing these, right? So is the MCV low yet? Well, maybe it is if enough of these are present to overcompensate for those guys, right? So are you sure it's hypochromic? Well, we did it again. We mixed normal blood with this cat's blood. And you can see, whoo, now you can really see how pale and small these erythrocytes are in this particular cat. And we'll finish up then with the non-regenerative anemias. Okay, which there are a slew of different disease processes that can cause non-regenerative anemias in the cat. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of these, particularly anemia of chronic inflammatory disease, a little bit about liver, and then end up with bone marrow disease. Anemia of chronic inflammatory disease, most common cause of non-regenerative anemia in the cat. And they seem to develop it quickly because of the things we talked about. One, they have a reduced erythrocyte lifespan. Two, they don't have very much in the way of iron stores to begin with. Okay, so they really develop this easily and quickly. But we don't usually see the anemia of chronic inflammatory disease go below 15% in the cat. So if you have an animal with a pax volume of 10, don't be thinking anemia of chronic inflammatory disease in those cases. Okay. The reason why this develops is that we believe the inflammatory cytokines immobilize the iron stores that the animals do have, and the red cell is not accessible to the red blood cells. So this is an anemic cat that had severe poik, had a non-regenerative anemia, and this poik that was present, these abnormal shapes, was associated with the liver disease in this cat. It's a cat with hepatic lipidosis. And many of you, I'm sure, have seen these hepatic lipidosis cats that develop severe anemias. They're severely anemic, and they're non-regenerative, and they often have poik because of the lipid metabolism that's disturbed, causes this in the red cells. Okay? And so What can we do with these animals? There's not a whole lot except fix the liver, because there's nothing you can do about the red cells. You're just going to have to fix the liver if there's an underlying cause, or treat the animal for lipidosis, because they will remain anemic until that underlying disease is cured. These cells have, again, reduced lifespan. And that, plus the chronic disease, kind of starts this process of these animals having this non-regenerative anemia that can go really low in these animals. And here's the last non-regenerative anemia we'll talk about. Remember I told you about nucleated red blood cells in a cat? So here's a cat, had a packed cell volume of 11. Lots of nucleated red cells. Non-regenerative anemia in this cat. And you can tell that because there's no polychromasia. And the reticulocyte count, punctate and aggregate, would be normal or low. Okay, it would be normal or low. So this would be non-regenerating, even though we have lots of nucleated red cells. And this is an animal that had an erythral leukemia. Okay, so that's one of the signs that we can see in neoplasia occurring in the bone marrow. Okay, so we'll just kind of look at some of these things. And BBUs. So here's an anemic cat that has this thing in its blood. A BBU is a big, blue, ugly cell. Okay? And when we see BBUs, we have to start worrying, especially when these animals have other cytopenias associated with it. This cat happened to have an acute myelogenous leukemia. It was a granulocyte line. Here's some other BBUs in an anemic cat. This animal had an acute lymphoid leukemia. But again, you're going to see these cells circulating and be able to identify them. Notice there's no neutrophils here in this picture because this animal was also neutropenic. Here's another cat that had an acute erythroleukemia. And here we have these BBUs present in the blood with nucleated red blood cells and no polychromasia. And of course, these diseases are not good to deal with in the cat. And here's the last tumor that circulates in the blood of cat. What's this one? Anybody give me a guess? Both of them are the same. Excellent. Mast cell, because if not, I was going to have to ask Dr. Rebar and Dr. Tabota what that was, and they wouldn't know. So mast cell. So, okay, I think it's time for a break. What do you guys say? But I'm happy to answer any questions. Yes, thank you. Yes. Yeah.